I don't think it's a case of manipulation. I think it's a case of a natural market reaction.
China keeps tight reins on its currency amid trade disputes. It's Wednesday, August 8th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Coming up, free speech tested in Hong Kong. South Korean conservatives support Donald Trump. Your food served by robots. Face blindness and getting a health diagnosis online. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China has tightened controls on trading in its currency to discourage speculators after a decline against the dollar. The move comes amid a tariff dispute with Washington, which fueled fears of a damaging outflow of capital from the world's second-largest economy. Traders must now post a 20% deposit for contracts to buy or sell yuan or renminbi, also called the RMB, on a future date. That raises the cost of betting it will drop and might help to discourage speculative trading. Last Friday, the Chinese currency slipped to a 13-month low of 6.91 to the dollar before strengthening to 6.83 after the margin requirement was announced. The deepening U.S.-Chinese tariff fight prompted suggestions Beijing might weaken the RMB to help exporters, but most analysts disagree. One of those is Gary Huffbauer. He's a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He spoke with VOA Asia's Ira Melman.
What's happening is that the financial markets always anticipate the future. That's the whole modern theory of financial markets. So people are saying, well, you know, these tariffs, they might go into effect, and then China might put its own tariffs on. Who can say? But because this might happen, the RMB is dropping. And what that means is that some investors are selling RMB, both Chinese investors and foreign investors. So I don't think it's a case of manipulation. I think it's a case of a natural market reaction to the threat of tariffs on U.S. imports from China.
China apparently is taking some action, putting some limitations and some kind of limitations on whether or not you were going to short sell on dealing with Chinese currency. Now, is that going to do anything? And can you explain what that entails?
Sure. So some market participants, they could be hedge funds, they could be individuals, they could be other kinds of firms, are anticipating all that I've talked about in terms of the RMB falling. So they're selling RMB today with the promise to buy it back at a later date, maybe a specified later date, like 2 months from now, or maybe unspecified. It's just an open trade. And that's putting some pressure, you know, again, in anticipation of this possible trade war, tariff war, on the RMB. Now, China is saying, we're going to try to stop these speculators. Those of us who have been following financial markets for decades have seen this story play out many times, that governments sort of blame the evil speculators for what's happening. It won't succeed this time. It didn't succeed in past events of this nature. But that's what governments try to do, show that they're doing something to stop these forces. But the forces are so strong that the only thing that will change the direction is if investors become persuaded that we're not going to have a tariff war, and then the situation would, you know, the expectations would change completely, and RMB would stop falling.
What is your idea of what a reduced value for the Chinese currency is, number one, to the Chinese economy, and number two, to what it means as far as the tariffs that the United States is placing on the trade.
Yes. Well, what it does is it offsets the prospective tariff. In other words, the tariff could be 10%, it could be 25%, whatever it is. If the Chinese RMB falls by, let's say it's fallen by about 10% now, 10-12%, that just offsets the tariff as far as exporters are concerned, that is Chinese exporting firms. So their, you know, their financial position is, you know, is not much hurt by the tariffs, and that means that the probably the trade flows aren't going to fall very much. Most economists, and I include myself in this group, don't think that having a trade war is going to be good for either the United States or China, that both countries will suffer, but that China will suffer more because it's more dependent on trade by a substantial amount than the United States. But let's be clear, everyone is going to take some pain along this policy path that we're headed on.
Washington imposed 25% tariffs on $34 billion of Chinese goods on July 6th and is considering an increase on an additional $16 billion, with another $200 billion list of goods threatened. Beijing matched Washington's first round of increases and on Friday threatened penalty charges on another $60 billion of U.S. imports. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. The United States accuses North Korea of not moving toward denuclearization. Watchdog says Australia lawmakers increasingly exploit race. Indonesian quake victims shelter in makeshift tents. Tourists evacuate. Luxury yacht at center of investment fund scandal arrives in Malaysia. Tokyo 2020 to boost security with facial recognition system. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are always found on Facebook at VOA Asia as well as our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The Foreign Correspondents Club in Hong Kong is pushing back at Chinese pressure to get it to cancel an invitation to independence activist Andy Chan of the Hong Kong National Party, who is scheduled to speak next Tuesday. His anticipated remarks come under the title, Hong Kong Nationalism, a Politically Incorrect Guide to Hong Kong Under Chinese Rule. In a statement Monday, the FCC said, quote, "We believe that in free societies such as Hong Kong, it is vitally important to allow people to speak and debate freely, even if one does not agree with their particular views." Joseph Cheng, a retired professor from Hong Kong City University, tells VOA's Victor Beatty, "The reputation of the former British colony as a bastion of free speech and freedom of association has been compromised since reversion to Chinese rule in 1997.
By towing the line of the Chinese leadership to strongly condemn any advocacy for Hong Kong independence, the basic protection of human rights, of freedom of speech, has been suppressed, has been compromised. So it seems that the Hong Kong government, as well as the pro-Beijing political leadership in the territory, are very eager to please China at the expense of Hong Kong's reputation being its basic human rights.
The Chinese Foreign Ministry has an office in Hong Kong. It said, "We're firmly against the attempt by any external force to provide a venue to the advocates of Hong Kong independence to spread their nonsense. With their open advocacy and engagement in separatist activities, the Hong Kong independence forces have crossed the bottom line of one country, two systems."
Yes, and it is very much against the actual situation in Hong Kong. We know that those who really advocate for independence are a very, very small minority in Hong Kong. But there is a strong sentiment of resentment among young Hong Kong people especially, to declare that they are not Chinese, that they would like to identify themselves as Hong Kongers and so on. This is, of course, a serious political and social phenomenon, and it requires careful study and careful understanding so as to understand why these young people think so and what to do to diminish, to reduce such sentiments. But instead, what we see here is this crackdown, this severe political suppression will not only harm Hong Kong's reputation, but will only strengthen and exacerbate the anti-China sentiment among Hong Kong people. And this kind of attitude, this kind of measures are certainly irrational on the part of Beijing and the Hong Kong government.
Joseph Cheng said there is little public support in Hong Kong for the Foreign Correspondents Club's stance. He said much of the media is engulfed in self-censorship so as not to antagonize Beijing. He said there is a sense of apathy among many residents who, he said, have resigned themselves to less freedom, with many choosing to emigrate. Happening now in Asia, search and rescue operations are continuing on the Indonesian resort islands following Sunday's powerful earthquake that has killed more than 100 people. Residents who lost their homes sheltered in makeshift tents while most tourists were able to evacuate Monday. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Good to have you with us, as always, on VOA Asia. Many conservatives in South Korea have been embracing Donald Trump's hardline approach to North Korea, and they say they support the U.S. president even after his change of tune at the Singapore summit. Reuters correspondent Grace Lee tells us more on South Korean perceptions of Donald Trump.
For 69-year-old Chung Sung-jin in South Korea, the United States is more than just an ally. He says without America's help in the Korean War, his country wouldn't exist. That's why he's fiercely loyal to the U.S. and its president, Donald Trump.
I support Mr. Trump's reign as leader of the world and guardian of liberty.
Chung is a conservative and a Vietnam War veteran. He's one of many conservatives who were drawn to Trump's initial tough talk on North Korea.
Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime.
But after the U.S. president's June meeting with Kim Jong-un, there's been a shift in tone.
Kim Jong-un was, he really has been very open and I think very honorable.
And for some, this has been nothing short of a betrayal.
During the summit, a lot of people were angry. But after gathering some information on social media, we now understand Mr. Trump has a bigger plan behind all of this.
For this colorful group of Trump supporters in Seoul, their faith in the U.S. president is unshaken. They gather regularly on the streets here to call for aggressive action against the North. Analysts say anti-communist rhetoric used by the South's military in the 70s still resonate for older conservatives, and they see the U.S. as their savior. Many of them, including Chung, are hoping Trump will resort to a so-called regime change if a denuclearization deal doesn't pan out.
North Korea has repeatedly lied. We can't ever trust them, and I hope President Trump recognizes that.
A recent poll after the summit pointed to a split in the South, with only 48% of conservatives saying the meeting in Singapore went well, compared to almost 80% of progressives.
Reuters' Grace Lee reporting. Coming up, a coffee upstart and robots at your service. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This latest news from VOA Asia, non-government organizations and researchers are calling on the Lao government to ensure transparency in its investigations on Lao populations affected by massive flooding from a breach in a hydropower dam wall that left more than two dozen people dead last month in southern Laos. Investigate the facts on all the day's news at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, robotic food servers and a coffee company quickly brewing customers are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Chinese e-commerce giant Alibaba has launched a futuristic restaurant concept. At the so-called robot He Diners, food is served by robotic waiters. The robots have helped Alibaba boost efficiency and lower labor costs. Chao Haitao is the product manager at Huma Robot Restaurant.
In a traditional restaurant, from queuing to entering the restaurant to seating and ordering to the chef and serving food, it's all a series of steps to go through. With our digitized system, these steps can be performed in a closed circuit. For example, customers can order food before they've been seated.
The diners are attached to Alibaba's new Hema chain of semi-automated supermarkets. Alibaba's e-commerce rival JD.com is also promising a high-tech eating experience. It recently announced plans to open 1,000 restaurants by 2020, all of which will feature robotic waiters. Robotics, artificial intelligence, and technology have been increasingly integrated into e-commerce in China. Chinese policymakers are concerned about the potential for human job losses. Chao Haitao.
But the investment in the small carts is a one-time investment, and their efficiency is about the same as that of people, and it saves a lot of costs.
Alibaba now has 57 Hema markets in 13 Chinese cities, all of which will eventually feature the robotic restaurants. A less than one-year-old Chinese coffee company, Luckin Coffee, is experiencing rapid growth, with 500 outlets sprouting up across the country and an estimated company value of $1 billion U.S. dollars. The company uses technologies and lower pricing to capture a bigger share of the market. Jeffrey Towson is a professor of investment at Peking University.
The price of a Starbucks coffee in China, Beijing, is the same as New York, even though the GDP capita is like one-sixth.
While Starbucks still has a bigger following given its 19-year presence in the country, Luckin's low price point, easy online ordering system, and coffee delivery service poses a threat to the coffee giant. Luckin has already won many customers in China with its cashless payments. A local customer.
Because there are so many options now, I will consider what's more convenient for me. With Luckin, for example, I can first order it on the app. When I'm in the car, I pick it up from the shop, then go. But with Starbucks, I have to physically queue to buy.
Luckin Coffee claims to have sold 5 million cups of coffee in its first 4 months of operation. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia, Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte on Tuesday threatened to kill corrupt police, including those accused of involvement in illegal drugs and other crimes, in an expletives-laden encounter on live TV. More than 100 policemen were escorted to the presidential palace to meet Duterte. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, while many people complain of struggling to put a name to a face, a rare disorder causes some people not to recognize faces at all. Prosopagnosia, also called face blindness, is a brain disorder in which people cannot recognize faces, sometimes even those of their family. Sadie Witowski has more.
If you met Dasha Reed on the street, you would probably not guess she suffered brain damage as a child. But you might notice something odd if upon second meeting, she did not recognize you.
Face processing is especially dependent on the right temporal lobe, and so it's on the side here.
Although she has generally recovered, Reed now suffers from prosopagnosia, or face blindness. With support from the National Science Foundation, psychologist Brad Duchesne and his collaborators at Dartmouth College are studying how people recognize and process faces.
My main interest is trying to understand the organization of the normal brain. And we use these brains that have suffered brain damage to try to make inferences about the way the normal brain operates.
Although acquired prosopagnosia was first formally described 150 years ago, it is rare and not well understood. Duchenne has gathered 20 participants with the disorder to create a database with results from a battery of tests.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Like the famous FACES task.
I don't know. John Travolta.
Yeah, baby.
The chin. You can't deny the chin.
They also test other aspects of perception and memory for objects.
And so imagine that we find somebody who suffered brain damage, and they can't recognize faces any longer, but they can still recognize cars in a parking lot, and they can recognize scenes and things like that. What that suggests is that faces are processed by different mechanisms in the brain.
Researchers look at the brain structure using MRI and test brain activity using functional MRI, while patients look at faces or scenes.
They are missing certain parts of the brain, or they have damaged certain parts of the brain, and we see that in MRI scans. And so if the part's not there, it can't act on anything. So we can make inferences on what that part does.
We hope that by really developing an understanding of face processing itself, that'll provide us with sort of a model for understanding the way other parts of the brain work.
Duchenne says his basic research on face blindness will not directly lead to any treatments, but Reed still wants to participate. With her help, researchers can better understand how we recognize the world and people around us. Sadie Witkowski, VOA News, Washington.
Robots can do a lot of things people can do, but can they replace doctors? A London-based artificial intelligence company says its AI robot doctors can diagnose patients just as well as a human clinician. But VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports some general practitioners say the service can never replicate the level of care given by human doctors.
Hi, Alexa. I want to speak to Babylon.
Hello, Louise. How can I help you?
Well, I've been feeling a bit dizzy recently.
Using Amazon's voice-controlled assistant Alexa, the software created by Babylon Health can interpret symptoms and tell a person what might be wrong with them after a series of questions.
Yeah, sometimes it feels like the room's spinning.
What we're trying to do with Babylon is make healthcare accessible, affordable, put it in the hands of every human being on Earth.
But the question is, how accurate is it? Can it ever, ever be as accurate as a human doctor in diagnosis?
At an event in London, Babylon's founder, Dr. Ali Parsa, says the app isn't intended to replace primary care doctors, also known as general practitioners, but it can be used to lessen their work. Stanford University Dr. Megan Mahoney is a believer in the technology.
As well, we do face a shortage of primary care in the United States, and it's been difficult to recruit people into primary care because they see what it's like. They rotate through those clinics and they see that there's just 50% of our time is paperwork.
But the program will never replicate the level of care offered by humans, says Camilla Hawthorne, even if it has some benefits.
But that's all about knowledge and how they use knowledge, but it's not about clinical skills. It's not about caring for the patient. It's not about knowing the patient who's come to see you and their family and their community and the area and the work that they do, which is just so much richer and so much more important to patients.
At Babylon Health's London offices, Dr. Mobashir Butt says the technology allows for an increase in accuracy.
We've also seen that actually when you look at the conditions that a GP would see most commonly and actually weight the results for those most commonly seen conditions, actually the accuracy of our AI goes up to 96%. And what that shows is that as the machine continues to learn, there's real opportunity for that accuracy to continue to improve.
Since 2016, Babylon has partnered with the Rwandan government to deliver accessible healthcare via mobile phone to about 2 million registered users in rural and remote areas. Dr. Hawthorne says in those circumstances, the AI technology provides exciting opportunities. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. As you know, we spend a lot of time telling you about all sorts of different stories. Now it's your turn. We'd love to hear your story. Send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. We'd love to hear from you and what's happening in your part of the world. We thank everyone who is tuning in on the radio, PSU Radio Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand. And we thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Kelvin Fowler, managing editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. Have a great day.